Hedgie, in my continued quest to destroy the podcast, I have come up with the ultimate challenge. I challenge you to a deep dive into Nabiki and Kasumi.
The Tendo sisters?
The Tendo sisters. Both of them. Of the three.
Oh, you underestimate me. In fact, you have just activated my track card.
No!
I, for one, have been anticipating breaking down specific characters. In fact, this is going to be child's play. The two sisters, everybody knows those two. We will break them down, and we will do it right here in... Hello, everyone. Welcome to Don't Know What to Do, your favorite Rama One Half podcast. I am your host, Elena / Edgy, depending on your level of familiarity with me. And I have just been challenged by our first returning guest.
You knew I would be back. And you have failed in challenge number one, and you will fail this challenge too. Or have you? I don't know. I actually haven't been paying attention. But when you said this would be child's play, that's good, because we will be talking today about children. Well, one of them. Nabiki, I think, is like 15 or something.
They're 17 and 19.
Really? Nabiki's 17? What?
Yeah, Akane and Ranma are 16.
Huh.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome back, Symbolic. It's good to have you here.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. And you've challenged me to these two specific characters, by which I mean these are the characters I wanted to talk about already. And it's very fitting. So I suppose I should lead in what... We've had fun on this podcast discussing all kinds of silly, goofy stuff, all the weird characters, all the wacky, absurd moments in the series. I think it's time we sit down and talk about, like, the main parts. The parts that everybody knows about, so they tend to skip over them, but there's room to unpack things there. And it would be weird to start with, like, hey, everyone, today we're breaking down Moose for 2 hours. You know, he's a fun character, not who I would do first, but we'll get to him eventually.
Instead, you decided to start with the two most important characters in the story.
Yes. Yes. Literally, did you know that the character image album songs are numbered?
Oh, boy.
They all have a little, like, drum, a little radio drama thing at the end of the singles, and those are numbered. So there's a specific order to the singles. Nabiki's is first.
Mm-hmm. As it should be.
Canonically, the most important character.
Speaking of Nabiki, I would like to quote TV Tropes at you to describe this character we're talking about, Nabiki. Here is a 100% accurate canonical description of her from TV Tropes. The second of the three Tendo girls, this 17-year-old is a happy, popular girl and quite at peace with herself, as well as extremely avaricious, manipulative, and completely amoral. Essentially, she owns a PhD in the art of being a bitch. There are no apparent limits to how low she will stoop, nor to whom she will backstab when it comes to making money. That seems very fair and accurate, right?
Oh, yes. I assume that the people writing for TV Tropes pages are experts in the field, just as I am. As this podcast is broken down, it's very easy to become a Ranma expert.
Here's one you're going to like. Here's Kasumi's summary. The eldest Tendo girl, Kasumi gave up any ambitions she might have had to become a homemaker after her mother died. Wait, I think that's missing some words. Because she gave up any ambition other than becoming a homemaker, right?
I think it's saying she gave up her ambitions, comma, specifically to become a homemaker.
Yeah, that's not what it's saying. That's not what these words mean, though, that are on this webpage.
But I think I get what they were trying to say.
Yeah, so it's we've got some accurate portrayals of these two characters. Yeah, Nabiki is greedy and likes money and will often use Ranma for money and, you know, do stuff for money. But I don't think she's quite as extreme as she's often painted, though I think that varies by story. And of course, Kasumi often is considered a saint, but also kind of clueless.
Yeah.
And is the sweet, innocent homemaker to the point that, like, some people say you can't draw certain kinds of art of her because she's just too pure.
Yeah. So, in addition to the, like, it's best to start with main characters, these two characters are also just a good example of something you brought up in the past with me. It just, the way that certain fans interpret the characters. I've hinted at, like, how, well, I've seen it all. I have, like, a million examples because I watched, like, way too much Ranma media, whereas most people watch, like, maybe two seasons at most. Their understanding is incomplete. But I never really went into detail of, like, well, what kind of understanding do these people have of these characters with their incomplete knowledge? Mainly because I wasn't really part of the fandom at the time, but it seems like you pulled up some very important documents.
Oh, yeah. I've got TV tropes, I've got fan wikis, I've got fan fiction. I have a delight for the senses. In fact, I would like to start by reading you an excerpt from a Nabiki and Kasumi-focused fan fiction. But no naughty bits. I'll skip those.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Sure.
This is part four of the Lemonade Punch series, which is a lemon, so there is some indecent stuff, but we won't be getting into that, in which the life at the Tendo Dojo has been turned upside down, much like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, due to a spice that somehow has put all the women in charge, and also they're horny, but more importantly for our discussion, now they're also dominant.
I see.
In the culture. Under the bright full moon, the Tendo Dojo was a picture of serenity. It was the hour of night that all was still and quiet. Not even the crickets chirped at this hour of night. This was the time of night that was never disturbed by anything, because all things, even things of the night, rested at this hour. And now someone is, of course, going to scream. I'm not going to scream because I don't want to hurt your ears. Ranma! You get back here! We're not done! Ranma scrambled down the hallway, pulling up his boxers while trying not to trip. Glancing behind him for any signs of pursuit, he nearly fell down the stairs. His heart pounded and he breathed heavily as he rounded a corner, then plastered himself against the wall. Ranma, Nabiki sang, where are you? She walked into the room, passing underneath Ranma, who was sticking above the doorframe, and looked about. Ranma dropped silently to the floor and dashed to the door. She spun around. Hey! Bolting back up the stairs, Ranma stopped midway, seeing a censored, cheerfully smiling Kasumi at the top. He turned and found Nabiki at the bottom, grinning like a jackal. Ranma looked back and forth between the two a few times, then vaulted over the banister to the floor below. And this chase continues with Nabiki chasing him and catching him in a trap, while Kasumi just kind of follows him like some sort of, like, ghost figure. She's just gently smiling serenely and just keeps appearing and floating towards him. I'm not going to discuss why, but that's the characters.
Yeah.
Controlling, scheming, demanding, relentless, and calmly, gently controlling everything, but smoothly.
See, I was initially thinking of, like, this is fun, but, like, people will write completely out of character fan fiction for anything. But then towards the end, you just made it clear how even in this extremely uncharacteristic portrayal of this series, there are still little snippets of the main core of these characters and why they are different from each other, even in things like this.
I actually chose this one as an example because in the story, it's called Lemonade Punch, and I'm not sure if I recommend it or not. But Lemonade Punch, the spice, the magic spice, which comes from Hapasai's evil twin brother, Hapasai being the good brother in this case, brings out all of their personalities and desires to the forefront. And so everyone becomes more so. So Akane becomes, in this case, more romantic, but also more passionate. Nabiki becomes more demanding and controlling. And Kasumi becomes more calm, but insistent, almost. Like,
yes.
You know. Also, I'm looking at a paragraph that I don't want to read, but the descriptions of them are a very amped up version of all of the ways they normally look.
I see. All right. Well,
yeah, so
that is fascinating. And yeah, this is a good example of, like, no matter how far you get from the like actual characters, the core is still there. And that's what I want to figure out.
Yeah.
What is the core of these characters? Where even the most misguided, disingenuous, like not even remotely interested in like taking these characters seriously attempt. What do people still think these characters are? And I think these sisters are a very interesting example because they're like, it's hard to tell what counts as a main character in Ranma sometimes. Do you get what I mean by that?
Especially since main characters disappear for months on end.
Yeah. I feel like the main cast is split into two camps. Everyone is either a rival or part of the family. And those two types of characters play two very different opposing roles depending on how they're utilized. So, like, rival characters, typically they will show up, they will be the main focus of a storyline. They will become the obstacle of the week. And once they're done, they'll usually disappear until it's their turn again.
Just some example rivals would be Ryoga, Moose, Kuno, and oddly enough, Shampoo, even though she's also a love interest.
Yeah. There's some weird overlap. Like, Genma is usually a family character, but he occasionally becomes an obstacle. Like, Ryoga's technically part of the family because he's their pet, but it's unclear how many people besides Ranma know that, and it's not like we really get to see his life as their pet. We pretty much only ever see him as Ryoga.
Definitely. And he can still function as part of the family. Like, if Ranma has to beat someone else and he goes camping and Ryoga's there and they train together, he's functionally filling a family role, not a enemy role. And of course, even Nabiki can be the enemy. And I think Kasumi, in a rather famous story arc, gets one time, I think, to be the rival.
Yeah, but the key difference I'm noting is that, like I said, a rival character is someone who will show up and be the main focus of the story, but they pretty much only show up when they're the main focus. Whereas the family characters are the opposite. They are constantly present, but they're very rarely the focus. Most of them only have, like, one or two examples, and even then they often have to share that screen time with other characters.
And they're usually sort of like the people back at the house in Dragon Ball Z, where they're commenting on, they might be making things more difficult, you know, they often will kick Ranma out of the house or demand he does something, but it's, you know, they do a lot of the domestic stuff.
They're the Greek chorus of the story.
Yeah. Another thing I think is interesting specifically about Nabiki and Kasumi is you've got three types of womanhood, four types of womanhood in the Tendo household. You first of all have Dead, which is the mom, whose name I forget.
I don't think they ever gave her a name.
They might have. Maybe. I don't know. I could look at the wiki. Let me go see what the wiki says. Wiki. Who's got the wiki? Relatives. Sound Tendo, father. Mrs. Tendo, mother, deceased. Okay, then. All right. The wiki doesn't know.
All right, but we at least have the other three.
You have Dead. You have embraces traditional Japanese female roles. So she's the homemaker. She's sweet. She's supportive. She's kind. She'll sometimes guilt you into doing something. That's Kasumi. You've got the kind of miserly, controlling, money, you know. Everybody who hates women has a way of describing Nabiki that's very specific.
Yes.
Now, Nabiki is one of my favorite characters, but I don't hate her. I don't think a lot of the characterizations of her are fair. No. But she does definitely value material possessions, scheme, backstab. That is a thing she does.
Yes.
But she's very materialistic, you know. And she's also got a very different style. You know, Kasumi is wearing long, flowy, very traditionally feminine, whereas Nabiki is wearing hip, stylish, often like cut-off jeans, tank tops, you know, stuff like that. And then you have the, I don't know how to describe Akane, because I don't think rejection of femininity is quite right.
Akane is definitely weird, because they refer to her as a tomboy, but she's arguably more feminine than Nabiki.
Yeah, like, she's into feminine things, she's got a lot of feminine interests and personality traits, but she also does martial arts, and that's considered masculine in this case, because she can fight somewhat. I mean, she can't fight at the anime level.
Yeah.
She's a good fighter, just at the human level, not at the anime level.
Yeah.
And, but she also, you know, she cuts her hair short. She beats up guys who hit on her. She doesn't like to have other people save her when she can save herself. So she's got some rejection of the feminine role. So she's almost like being female is awkward.
Yeah.
Might be how I'd describe
her. There's like a level of individuality, whereas on the opposite scale, you've got Kasumi, who, it's not that she doesn't have any individuality, but like her role is very much what her family needs her to be, regardless of how much she enjoys that, which we don't really know, but...
Are you familiar with the concept of the Yamato Nadeshiko?
Yes. Would you like to explain that?
I guess, really quickly, it's the set of traits that a perfect female in Japan... Oh god, I said female. Like a perfect, like, feminine character woman would have in Japan. How they talk, how they act, how they ask for something, how they keep a house.
Yeah, I believe in modern terminology, the ideal waifu.
Depending on who it's coming from.
Like, true.
The ideal waifu for a traditional Japanese man.
Yes.
And Kasumi's kind of that, but she also, you know, she does math, she handles the finances, she doesn't wear Japanese style clothes very often. If I remember, she's mostly wearing like loose and baggy Western style clothes. So she's not quite that, but she's the closest example we have other than Dead or someone who's not in the Tendo household. So we have Dead, we have mostly traditional feminine, we have very materialistic and uppity, maybe it could be Nabiki, and then we have all this girl stuff is awkward, which is a weird four dishes to have at a buffet. Wait, that's a weird way of putting it.
Well, yeah, different representations of archetypes, which have maybe evolved over the years, but you could definitely see the various, like, anime stereotypes that were born from these types of characters.
Yeah. And I think they're very interesting. Yeah. So where should we go first? You had mentioned to me that you had key storylines for each of the characters picked out. Would you like to discuss one of them?
Well, yeah. I guess. I was thinking, like, It's weird because, like, I want to discuss the characters, but they're so simple that we kind of already have. But that's, again, sort of what makes them the Greek chorus. They're the opposite of the rival characters. And I feel like, despite the fact that the family characters are typically not, like, important, quote-unquote, to, like, the whatever is currently happening, again, they're the Greek chorus. They exist to have funny commentary on what is happening. But that said, I still think it's interesting how, maybe I'm wrong, but the impression I got is that, like, if you were to ask people their top five favorite characters, most people would have either Kasumi or Nabiki somewhere in that top five.
I think so, yeah. I think that's very normal. You certainly wouldn't list Kinosuke Kashou.
I might be bad with names. Which one is that?
According to the wiki, the king of poverty, and in manga only, a love interest for Nabiki, who specializes in passing their bills off to other people.
Oh, that guy! Yeah, he appeared once. Yeah, there was a whole storyline. I said that there are, like, the family characters typically only have, like, one or two stories where they're the main thing. There was one story where Nabiki got her own rival. Like this is like Nabiki's fight, but of course Nabiki doesn't do martial arts, so they have a money battle where the whole story is about, like, there's this super rich guy, but then it turns out he's not even actually rich. He's just the ultimate con man. And he and Nabiki get in this money battle where basically they go on a nice date. And the rules are the first person to spend any money has to pay for the entire date. So the two of them just keep finding new ways to, like, pass the bill to each other and racking up this extremely expensive date where they go to the fancy restaurants, they take a private jet off to some nice place and get all these expensive items, knowing that one of the two is gonna have to pay for all this. And like by the end, it is escalated to like they're in the private jet, but uh-oh, the pilot is sick, and we need someone to land the plane. Oh no, the controls are coin operated. Quick, Nabiki, put a coin in there so you can land the plane. As he turns around and the guy's gone, he jumps out the plane with his parachute. But then he pulls the string and it's been sabotaged as Nabiki like skydives down next to him with a spare parachute that's like $50. And it just becomes just this insane nonsense where like the two of them claim that they are in love with each other because I've never met my equal before. This is great. They're both having such a fun time.
It says here in no uncertain terms that she loves Kinosuke,
Yeah.
according to the wiki.
She says that she loved him while also ruining his life by eventually winning the money battle and giving him all the debt. And then he's never brought up again. So, you know, hard to tell how much she actually meant by that. It's presented as a joke of like, truly, this is the man I'm destined to be with, as the two of them just completely ruin each other for the sake of this money battle. And that's her story. It's one of two storylines where Nabiki is the focus. She's not just there to like commentate on what's happening. This is a story about her. And it's very rare that we get those with the family characters. Honestly, I kind of prefer the family characters for this reason, and it's why I think Kasumi and Nabiki are so funny and interesting and so popular, is because you get characters like, say, Shampoo, who when Shampoo shows up, she's the main focus. It's a story about Shampoo. She's either she's back as the villain of the week, she's up to weird wacky shenanigans or something, or it's some kind of problem that Ranma and Akane end up having to help with because she's their friend. You know, so reluctantly, these people are still their friends and they look out for each other.
Because they're a team of allies.
Yeah. But like when Shampoo isn't the main focus, she's just not around at all. Like, she's just at home delivering for her family's restaurant. She only ever shows up when the story is about her, meaning there's very little variety to the situations we see Shampoo in. She's only here
Interesting.
when like she's the focal point, but because of that, there's less development. Whereas with the family characters, they're never the focus usually, but because they're always around, we see them in more scenarios. We see more snippets of their characterization. I think the best example I have for what kind of person Kasumi is a one-off joke in a filler episode of the anime.
Okay, tell me about it.
So there is an episode where they find a salesman who has the like the Jusenkyo powder, where you just instant Jusenkyo spring, just add water. But the labels have worn off, so he's selling them at discount because he doesn't know which powder is which. He just knows, well, one of these is from the Spring of Drowned Boy, if you guys want to buy them at discount. So it becomes this like Russian roulette thing of, well, this powder might fix Ranma or it might transform him into something else. So he's kind of
Oh
terrified
boy.
to use it. And there's just this one joke where so Ranma, he was gonna use it, but then he looks at his dad as a panda and is like, huh, maybe, I don't know. And then it just cuts to like the whole family around the dinner table talking. And they all have different ideas of what to do. You know, Akane's like, this might be dangerous, maybe you shouldn't. Nabiki's like, just do it, who cares, what's the worst that could happen? And my favorite response is Kasumi, upon hearing this, is like, that sounds like fun, why don't we all use the powder? We could be a family of pandas. And everyone just kind of looks at her like she's being weird, and they have this little imagined spot of a whole family of pandas, and then they just shrug it off and continue talking. And she stops existing for the scene. But the fact that that's her response This powder could turn us into anything.
That's very telling.
And she not only thinks that it's a good idea for Rama to use it, she thinks they should all use it.
One of the things that I also think is interesting about Kasumi is that you've got these other stories that, you know, specifically the reversal jewel and the possessing Oni. Both of them are about what Akane isn't normally like. You know, like, she's evil now, and she's acting different, and those are what people often point to as her main stories. And the who she isn't there because she's acting differently. She's not acting the normal role of just this normal person. So I like your example, because instead of being about who she isn't, what she isn't like, it's instead, well, what is she besides sweet and nice and cook? And it's,
yeah,
let's all be pandas. Let's all gotcha ourselves.
Yeah, I don't, like, there are stories where Kasumi is more of a focus, but she's never the focus. She always has to share that screen time with, like, say, Dr. Tofu or an evil Oni or whatever weird thing is showing up. We never get, like the Nabiki thing, where this is Nabiki having a fight with someone. This is following the format of a typical Rama storyline where the weirdo of the week challenges someone to a bizarre martial arts, except for once, it's Nabiki who has to do the fight. That's an interesting thing, but we never get that with Kasumi, except for, like, maybe one or two filler episodes. But especially in the manga, we just, like, we never really get an idea of what Kasumi is really like. So it's really easy to just sort of invent your own thing. We know that she is very sweet. She is a housewife type character. She does the cooking and cleaning. She never seems to complain. She acts oblivious, but, like, how much of that is her being oblivious versus her being dumb or her just not being concerned? You know, when we get a scene of, like, she's making breakfast and then Ranma runs past her screaming, and then 5 seconds later Shampoo is chasing after him being like, I kill you, Ranma, and Kasumi's response is like, oh, Shampoo's here, should I ask her if she's staying for breakfast? Like, she does not care about the potential murder happening. But, like, does she not care? Is she being dumb? Or is she just confident that Shampoo isn't actually going to kill Ranma? We don't know.
One of the ones I'm thinking about is, do you remember the one where they find the cookbook, Mrs. Tendo's cookbook?
Yes.
And Akane is trying to master the first level. And Kasumi plays a fairly large role in that, but it's mostly as, like, a transmitter vessel of her dead mom's spirit knowledge.
It's a funny thing because, like, it's a running gag that Akane can't cook, and, like, here's this whole storyline where she finds the recipe book and she wants to learn, and Kasumi is encouraging Akane to just try them out, to learn. She wants Akane to try the things she wants to do. She's very encouraging. But also, Kasumi could just teach her at any point. Why isn't Kasumi giving her lessons?
It's interesting because, if I remember correctly, she's mostly like, trust mom, look at the book, you can do it, try again. And it's almost like, all right, here's my conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
What if Kasumi is possessed by Mrs. Tendo?
Ooh.
What if she's been hollowed out as a human being, there's nothing left, and she's just Mrs. Tendo? And not even necessarily all of Mrs. Tendo.
Just a piece of her soul. Mm-hmm. We have no way of disproving this. We have no way of disproving anything, really.
It makes a lot of sense regarding how Sound treats her.
Yeah.
Especially in fanfic.
Oh boy, I'll believe that.
But I'm not going to go there. But just, like, you know, he's always, like, he turns to her as an emotional support. Treats her, and I don't mean this in a creepy way, though, if you treated Ranma with realistic psychology, the way he relies on Kasumi might be age inappropriate.
Hard
to say.
Yeah, as we keep bringing up, he doesn't seem to have a job. Someone's got to do this work. And, you know, it's easy to read it as Kasumi taking on the responsibility of maintaining the house because no one else can do it, as opposed to her just simply wanting to be of, you know, support. It's like she has to.
Yeah, and everyone expects her to. And if she doesn't, everything goes wrong. Like when, like in the previously mentioned weirdo episodes. But she's also like, all the knowledge she gives when she's giving someone knowledge is very what her mom did. Though if I remember correctly, I'm trying to remember, I think Ranma turned himself, didn't he, as female Ranma, also try to learn and get actual lessons from Kasumi? Wasn't that a thing?
So that special is an adaptation of the story where Ranma's mom is giving Ranma and Akane cooking lessons. And then the anime version, the OAV, expanded on that and added this subplot of Akane's mom and Nobiki encouraging that. But yeah, we do get the moment where Ranma is also taking the cooking lessons. And mainly because he's hyper-competitive and also because it's his mom. He wants to spend time with her, even if he's a little discouraged when it's presented as like, yeah, good job. You'll make a wonderful bride someday.
Now, I'm not saying that means anything, but there might be some gender there.
Yeah. Boy, I have, like, you could absolutely have a whole episode on Ranma's mom and his relationship there. But we're talking about the sisters.
Yeah, I was thinking about if, I couldn't remember if it was Kasumi who did the teaching, because if Kasumi did the teaching, then that's significant that she'll teach Ranma, but not Akane. But if that was Nodoka, then that's a different thing. So that's more evidence for my hollowed out ghost theory.
Yeah, there is one of my, in fact, that exact storyline with Rama's mom and the cooking lessons does include one of my favorite jokes. And it was significantly toned down in the animated version, probably because they added those extra things of Kasumi being encouraging and wanting Akane to cook. But in the manga version, since that stuff didn't exist, we just get the initial joke because there's this whole thing about Akane wants to do dinner because Kasumi is sick. And she's like, don't worry, sis, I'll be in charge of dinner. And then the next panel is Kasumi, like, all the way across the room, crawling her way out of bed to the kitchen while her dad's trying to force her back in bed to get her rest, which is just the closest we get to Kasumi acknowledging that, like, okay, but Akane's cooking is actually lethal. Like, she wants to encourage her, but also, I should be present for this, please. She doesn't say anything, but I just love the comedic timing of, like, she's in bed, and the very next panel, she's all the way over there trying to crawl to the kitchen because she cannot let Akane do this.
I mean, that's dangerous. That's Necronomicon level stuff, according to the fandom. Now, here's a Kasumi question. One of the Kasumi traits on TV Tropes is brutal honesty. Kasumi often throws barbs that are actually devoid of snark, which makes the stings more painful. What do you think? Accurate? Not accurate.
I think that is definitely accurate, but again, similar to like again, I gave the example of like Shampoo is literally chasing Ranma, saying she's going to murder him. And Kasumi doesn't seem concerned at all. She's just trying, like, well, we need to be a good host to our guests. Let's ask if Shampoo wants breakfast.
Do you think she's trying to throw a barb, or do you think it's like accidental, like, oh yeah, this thing, and then it hurts a ton to the person, but she's not aware of it?
I don't think she is, again, we have no way of knowing for certain. Like when Shampoo first shows up to their house for the very first time, as she kisses Ranma and all that drama happens, and Akane walks in and is like, what the hell is going on? Kasumi is the one who summarizes it as like, oh, I think Ranma's ex-girlfriend from China came and they're having a fight. And it's like, that's technically not inaccurate based on her knowledge, but that is very clearly not what Akane wants to hear.
That makes sense. Here's another fun one. She has been described as being like a bodhisattva. Now, if you're not familiar with a bodhisattva, that's someone who has reached enlightenment in Buddhism and is ready to leave behind the world. They are so wise. Or they are staying around to teach all of the rest of us how to achieve enlightenment. I think is a fairly decent summary. I hope so. Anyway, so it says, never getting angry, never yelling, and is kind to everyone. That's how the fandom views her, I feel like. She's, yeah. perfect. She's inflappable. In the show, I feel like there's sometimes when she's a little annoyed. If I recall, she does get mad at Saun after the whole gambling king thing.
Even when she's like expressing concern or disappointment, she's still doing it with a smile. It's often more like, hey, Ranma, you made a mistake. You should apologize to Akane or something like that. It's very rarely like her getting upset. We never really see that. She is always smiling. She is always positive. Again, the closest example I have to her breaking that character is the cooking example, where she just, without even saying anything, drags herself out of bed because she doesn't want Akane to cook. But she doesn't say that she doesn't want Akane to cook. She just insists on being present. She's still doing it with an air of politeness.
That's, you know, I think some of these are very interesting because of that.
Yeah.
Let's...
Like I said, we have no way of knowing, like, how much of it is genuine, how much of it is, like, her putting on a brave front for her family versus whether she actually enjoys being this perfect, smiling, happy person. In my opinion, I see it all as genuine because I think that's funnier.
I think so, too.
I think it's funny when, like, you have storylines where a giant phoenix destroys the entire neighborhood, and as it flies away, Kasumi is waving goodbye, like, bye, birdie! Have fun!
I do love that.
It's funnier when she's being genuine.
And it's also, like, I mean, I think that works with the Dr. Tofu stuff, because I think, if I remember correctly, it's textual that he's always a bumbling, not very good at anything guy when she sees him, and she just thinks that's all of him because he's got this huge crush on her, and everyone else is like, wait, no, he's like a good martial artist and is actually kind of smart.
Yeah, he's a very, like, competent, reliable guy, except when he's around Kasumi, then he just becomes a bumbling idiot because the pretty girl is here. That's definitely one of the other interesting things that we don't know, which is, does Kasumi know that Dr. Tofu has a crush on her? We never get any insight into that, mainly because Dr. Tofu stops appearing, but still.
Here's another one. Light feminine and dark feminine. The light feminine to Nabiki's dark feminine.
Dark feminine. That's a term.
That's what it says here. Light feminine and dark feminine.
For some reason, I don't have a lot of confidence in the type of people putting that into certain pages.
I'm just saying, I think it's foil to shampoo when it comes to Akane.
Oh, sure.
Shampoo is basically what Akane would wish to be as a fighter, while Kasumi is what Akane wishes to be as a woman. I don't... Maybe at first, but I think Akane...
Akane's very contradictory in that, like, she seems content with how she is, but also she wants Ranma's praise when she's being feminine. And gets offended if he doesn't give her that praise or if he doesn't care about her being feminine at all.
And she also's like, you know, Akane, you know, ends up giving up on the pursuit of being Kasumi. And I don't think she ever expresses wish I could fight as well as Shampoo. I think she just says, I wish I could fight better.
I don't think she even does that. Like, she never seems to express any interest in improving as a fighter. She just kind of does the same routine as always. She never actively gets involved in fights unless it's a matter of pride, like for the dojo. But, like, if Ranma's in trouble, and she almost never helps with fighting. She often helps with some other supportive role. It's interesting how unfortunately Akane does often become a damsel of distress in a lot of stories, despite the fact that she's been established as being more capable than that. In situations where she should, but, like, yeah, her relationship with femininity and how that connects to characters like Shampoo and Kasumi, I suppose you could explore that, but that's still just your read of the characters. It's not something I would put in a wiki.
Okay, here's a good one. You'll like this one. This is from the Nabiki page.
Oh, boy.
The sociopath. One of very few characters who is played as an extreme textbook case. Then again, this very much is an anime populated by super strong jerk asses that fight amongst themselves and try to kill one another with little to no provocation, often damaging their surroundings, and she still manages to nearly top them all with her sheer unrelenting greed. I feel like she never took her flying city and kidnapped all of the potential brides she could want from somewhere. I don't know if tops them all with her unrelenting greed really is accurate.
No, I'm sensing some bias in the Nabiki stuff in particular, which surprises me. That's not the character I expected to get this the most. I figure there'd be some, but...
Oh, there's a comment, you know, hold on, let me see if I can find it. Here it is, under Gold Digger. Pity to anyone who develops a crush on her, including a teenage symbolic Godzilla, because she'll fleece and blackmail their asses for every yen until they've run dry. Maybe? I don't know.
Maybe. There's stuff to analyze there, but because Rumiko Takahashi isn't going to explore that stuff, we're on our own for some of these things.
And it's mostly, I think, for punchlines, like, yeah, $50 and I'll do it. As you know, like,
I know it's like the 80s and the early 90s, but like she tends to not ask for a lot of money, to be honest.
Here's another one. Under Three Faces of Eve, which I'm not going to get into that concept, it describes her as the seductress, the immoral, sociopathic, hedonistic, and manipulative Tendo sister.
Oh boy.
You're not wrong necessarily, but the seductress. First of all, she's 17. And second of all, I think one movie two, she uses seductive wiles at first to defeat her specific opponent. If you remember, she's got the big guy that, and you know, she acts a little seductive and then she beats him up with a pillow and then he becomes her servant. But by that point, you know, Nabiki fandom has infiltrated the actual show. The call is coming from within the house. I think that fits here. But like most of the time, I can't really remember anything outside of fan art and fanfic that really is she's being seductive.
Not really, no. I suppose
she wears less clothing than the other two sisters.
Yeah, but it's also just it's not even that revealing. It's mostly just like very hip 90s clothes, which honestly, Rumiko Takahashi's taste in fashion just like chef kisses to that. Like these teenagers dress with style.
She's got like cut off jeans and a tank top because it's summer. Okay, yeah, she looks good, but she's not like. She's just kind of hanging out.
Yeah, the closest you could say to her seducing someone is with Tatewaki Kuno, age 17. But in there, it's very obviously depicted as, like, he is a creep who just wants photos of Akane and Ranma. And Nabiki's just there to take advantage of that. He's going to pay somebody to stalk them. I may as well just make some money off these pictures.
And the things that I think a lot of people interpret seductive there are like, she's like, oh, Kuno-chan, can't you do this for me? Which is, I don't think that's seductive. That's more like, I'm a helpless woman, do this for me.
Also, he is like, from the very first interaction with them, because they're classmates, I honestly hate that we stop seeing these characters interact with each other after the first couple of chapters. Because I love that initial set of scenes of them in class together. And you just get the sense that, like, they've been at this for years. Kuno is fully aware of what her deal is, and he will make it clear he does not like her. And she'll be like, oh, thanks. Like, she takes that as a compliment.
And it's much more of a, like, I'm manipulating you and I know it, and you know it, as opposed to, like, I'm a devious master schemer. Yeah. And, I mean, she becomes that when it's funny.
Yeah. And also, he's, like, stalking her sister, so, like... This is the interesting thing, going back to the thing about, like, the cast of jerk-asses, of, like, no matter who is being wronged in this series, most of the time, they have it coming. Everyone's done something that's like, okay, they didn't deserve it this time, but also, like, two episodes ago, they were being assholes, so whatever. Like, it's really easy to shrug off what happens to these characters. Like, is Nabiki cheating Kuno out of his money and tricking him and using and manipulating him? Yes, but also Kuno sucks.
And also he's rich. He's ridiculously rich. He's got familial wealth dating back possibly hundreds of years, and that's a guess. Again, we got to be clear, I think, a lot of times what's textual and what's guess. We don't know a lot about Kuno's family.
Not really.
But based on how he acts, I would assume he's an older, you know, older Japanese wealth.
Yeah.
Moneyed family.
And you also have to take into account, like manga canon versus anime filler canon. But still, definitely... Yeah. Definitely the type of person who you're like, yeah, he was conned, but who cares?
Here's another one that I think you'll like. This is under Proud Beauty. And I want you to quickly count all the times this showed up in a storyline. Nabiki is regarded as attractive by her classmates and has her fair share of would-be suitors. I want you to name them all. She's perfectly aware of this and tends to use her sex appeal to fleece them for all they're worth before dumping them. Name all the times she does that.
I think Tatewaki Kuno at age 17 is literally the only classmate of hers we ever see her interact with.
What about all these would-be suitors? Are you saying TV Tropes, and by extension, the fandom at large might be wrong about her?
I think we've heard enough of these tropes to sort of break down how, how like, it's really easy to just sort of, like, get the vibe of a character with a story like Ranma, you know? Not a lot of, like, textual things happen on screen, but there's so much for you to fill in the details. And sometimes people will fill in the details in weird ways. I can understand why someone would look at, like, say, Kasumi and be like, she's too nice. There has to be some kind of hidden layer to that. I think that's a boring read because, again, I think it's much funnier and interesting for her to legitimately be that careless and but still kind and polite to everyone. But I can understand why someone would want to fill in those blanks to get this characterization out of her.
It's also fun, I think, to Rumiko Takahashi because when she turns Kasumi evil, she's not that evil. It's more like, you know, if I remember the two times that I referenced, she's very gentle. Like, she pokes Akane, or Ranma's forehead and says, "Don't do that. Don't be bad." And that's it. That's the whole thing she does.
Yes. I guess we should get down because this is maybe the best example we can pick. You are, of course, referring to the storyline. I believe the OAV version is titled "The Evil Ogre." Hell hath no fury like Kasumi scorned. Or, if we're going by the English title for the VHS that contained this episode, you could call it Faster Kasumi Kill Kill.
Also, I'm going to say I'm pretty sure neither of those are accurate translations of the original title.
You never know. I was surprised when I found out Back to the Hapusai was the literal name in Japanese. That was not localization. But yes, this...
Oh, wow.
I love this one because it sounds... It makes me think of that one Family Feud clip. Just like, name something Kasumi should do more of. Kill!
Now, doesn't... If I remember correctly, she gives her dad a bad back massage.
We can break down. First, I want to get a big bit of background into what is happening in this story. Because I think that's very important to know about what this story teaches us about Kasumi. This is a story where I think this gives us a surprising amount of insight into Kasumi's character because of the rules for how this weird supernatural element works. So the start of the story is the Tendo family has been hired to supervise this, transfer because there's an evil Oni that's been sealed away in some magic box, but, the seal is wearing off, so they have to move him to a new seal. And, well, you know... As you are in this situation, you hire the local martial artist in case the evil Onis break free. Who else are you going to hire for that? And of course, the joke that Rumiko Takahashi loves to do, the Oni breaks free, And it looks like this tiny little, like, children's doodle. Like, he is a circle with stick figure legs. And he's evil. And he immediately possesses Genma. And Genma proceeds to, like, smash stuff and draw on people's faces while laughing maniacally. And then the monk explains that, not unlike that fanfiction you read before, the Oni isn't so much taking control of the people it possesses, so much as it brings out their darkest inhibitions. Which then leads to the funny joke where, like, they punch the Oni out of Genma, and Genma continues to smash things like, haha, I'm evil! And they're like, Dad, the Oni left. He's like, right, sorry. So immediately we're told, this is how the Oni works. It's not controlling you, it's bringing out what's already within you. And I think that's especially relevant given what happens later on once Kasumi gets possessed.
Yeah.
So, interesting thing about this story, it was a single chapter in the manga. These chapters are like 20 pages long, and this was adapted into, like, how long were the OAVs?
I want to say 30 minutes, but they were long. They were longer than a typical episode.
Yes, they were longer than a televised episode. They were like 30 to 40 minutes. And like,
yeah.
They had to fill it out. But I find it really interesting because I remember when you first used this example. This was before I watched the OAVs. So when I heard Evil Kasumi, I did not know you were referring to this story. Because in the manga version, she's possessed for like 3.5 pages. It's such a minor non-thing. Mm-hmm. It's a single chapter. Like, most characters are possessed for like a page or two, and then they punch it to the next person, and it's just wacky shenanigans, and then they capture the Oni, and that's it. It didn't feel like a Kasumi storyline. But then when it was animated, not only did they expand that, she's now getting top billing in the title. Faster, Kasumi! Kill! Kill!
And I think that's the right choice, because of all the characters to get possessed by this demon, she's the funniest.
Yes!
So give it, you know, there's more, it's easy to come up with more jokes for that, and to be like, you're not disrupting the canon, this isn't, I don't care, shonen show, I don't remember the title that I was going to say. You can be like, yeah, we're going to take this joke you had, we got some ideas, we're going to expand it, and it's going to be even more fun, and that's good.
Yeah.
We're doing a good adaption by letting more of it play. And I think that's one of the reasons that the OAVs are some of my favorite stuff, because they take these small bits and they let them play.
Yeah, even the regular televised episodes, obviously they were only like 20 minutes long, so you saw less of this, but I loved when they did exactly that. And fleshed out these moments of just like, yeah, it makes sense. This stuff that is sort of canon, we're just sort of adding more of that because it's fun to see. We need to fill out this time somehow. You know, it's funnier when Ranma's going on a date with the panda doodle and there's stupid demon battles in the background that he can't get involved in because he's got to date the panda doodle. It's just very goofy. It's great when they know how to expand on a joke. Like that. And I agree, this is the correct thing to do, to expand on it. But also fascinating is that they don't add very much. Most of what happens in the OAV still happens in the manga version. But the difference is, Kasumi is possessed for the same number of pages as Ryoga is. But when Ryoga gets possessed, mm-hmm. he's like, I'm gonna spy on Akane in the bath. And then he has this whole action sequence where Ranma's trying to stop him. But then Ranma falls into the bathroom and Akane gets mad and punches him. And then the Oni gets away. So now they don't know where
it is. It's the same thing you always see.
Yes, it is the same thing you always see.
That seems very typical.
Yes, but more importantly...
Something is happening.
Yeah. But more importantly...
he falls in the bath, punch.
Yeah. More importantly, though, this is like 3 pages of an action sequence.
No, I'm going to interrupt you again. I'm interrupting you again. Ha ha.
So,
you must say more importantly 3 more times more to stop me.
So this is an action sequence. Each panel is like a single motion. This is a single scene over the course of like 3 pages. Yeah. Meanwhile, when Kasumi is possessed, it's a montage where each individual panel is a different thing that she's doing. Where, like, she'll be giving her dad a back rub, but she's using the demon claws to, like, scratch into him and hurt him. She'll, like, patch one of Ranma's shirts, but then she stitched a very rude word in the back of it.
Question for you. Does she actually cut him open when she's giving the back rub, or does it just hurt?
I think she's just digging the nails into the into his shoulders. I don't think we see...
Okay, so it's just like a... It's like a bad back rub, not like a I will kill you.
Yeah, I think the only thing she does in the manga that's, like, actively heinous is what she offers to, like, Iron Genma's shirt. But she does it while he's in panda form, so she's just pressing the shirt against his bare fur, and it's actively hurting him. And
Genma deserves it.
Yeah, in fairness. But also, yeah, it's kind of mean. You're actually burning him. That's the only one that, like, because the others are, like, it's so interesting how she is still technically doing these household chores. She is still prioritizing being the house caretaker. She's still doing the things she's supposed to do. It's just that she's also hurting people in the process. So it's very passive-aggressive. The first thing she does is, because what happens is, again, because of the wacky situations where Ranma accidentally sees Akane in the bath, they lose the Oni. And everyone's just gathered at the kitchen like, oh man, the Oni could be anywhere. We better start looking, but first let's have lunch, whatever. And then they all just, like, pass out. And they're like, oh no, a paralysis poison. What happened? And then they look at Kasumi and she's got the Oni horns. And she's like, oh my, did I do something evil? Oops.
That's an interesting thing you said. It brings out the person's characterization and it brings out some passive aggression. And I think that gives us a little bit of hint into the real Kasumi, if there is such a thing. Because these are cartoon characters.
Yeah.
Like, I mean that in the sense of they are... You know, they act like cartoons. They are not drama characters. She has a lot of times where she wants something, and so she might... Her obliviousness, her, I don't want to deal with that, her, oh, Ranma, can you do this? I really don't want to. And the way she phrases it, and he knows, I will feel horrible guilt if I don't do this.
Yeah.
That all strikes to me of there is a layer of passive aggression going on in her that makes her... Not the purity monolith that you might think, even though she also is that in a way. That's part of the central contradiction of her.
Yeah. Once again, she won't say it, but she's clearly aware that Akane is a bad cook and she doesn't want Akane making dinner. She's not completely oblivious. And I think I really like this poisoning the food example because everyone passes out. And then the very next scene is just them talking, like, they're all awake again. And they're like, well, now what do we do? Because before, we got rid of the Oni by punching the person. But then when Ranma tries that, Soen is like, you are not punching my daughter, stop that. So now they have to find a new way to deal with this. But, like, it skips to them after they regain consciousness, which implies that Kasumi poisoned them and then just left them on the kitchen floor for, like, an hour or two until they all woke up. Like, she didn't do anything to them.
She probably just, like, made some tea, sat down, and had a drink, you know? She probably just relaxed.
Again, the one exception is with Genma, where she's actively burning him with the iron. But the other stuff, like, she's just like, well, Ranma has a hole in his shirt. He asked her to, you know, patch it together, so she does that. It's just, she's going to also mess with him. She's going to give her dad a back rub, but it's not going to be a good back rub.
And Genma is the worst person in her family life. He's the one who brings, I would say, the most disruption, because Soen is normal. Soen is her dad.
Yeah.
He doesn't bring disruption, even though he does, but she does, you know, she accepts it. The sisters, yeah, it's fine. Ranma, you know, she has chided Genma for not learning Chinese and for various other things for the trip. So Ranma, I think she almost sees as a victim in a lot of ways.
She understands that, like, Ranma has good inside of him and she wants to bring that out sometimes.
But Soen is literally just there ripping off the family, trying to freeload. You're right. Genma, Ranma's dad, whichever one is Ranma's
dad. It's okay. I'm super paranoid about when I accidentally say the wrong name.
here, I'm deliberately saying whoever is Ranma's dad, because
we don't know.
Conspiracy theory time.
We don't know.
Paternity test. So anyway, yeah. So if Genma, he's, and he breaks the place a lot. He causes messes. He's lazy. Ranma actually will do the shopping sometimes.
True.
You know, he will listen to Kasumi. Genma doesn't. And Genma probably sheds.
True. I never thought about him shedding.
Genma probably sheds. So in that episode, her repressed anger towards Genma is probably hotter than anyone else. And you notice when she's mad at Ranma, all she does is the, you've been a bad little boy. You know, she's got a very almost motherly view of him. And he's like misbehaving, but he's been raised wrong. She's just like, no.
Yeah, no. In this montage, she doesn't do anything directly to her sisters either.
Yeah, she. Why would she?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's probably frustrated with Sound, but she's, you know, she still loves her dad, and he could do a lot better. He doesn't deserve a loving, relaxing back rub from his daughter, because he should get off on his butt and maybe go do something. You know, but also she does love him, and he is normal to her, so it's more acceptable. She's probably just frustrated with him. And Akane and Nabiki, for all of their like, someone else is going to do it teenage attitude, they are also teenagers, and she's a teenager, so she understands that attitude.
Yeah.
You know, I think she's got an inner, not necessarily intelligent, like super, super intelligent passive aggression, but I think it's in there. There's some resentment, especially towards Genma, and at least some annoyance at some of the other characters who caused these disruptions.
Yeah.
I wanna switch gears real quick, if that's all right. Is that cool?
Sure.
I wanna go back to Nabiki because I have a favorite of these two characters. But also, I was thinking about something you said, which is how they're very simple and also not, and it's easy to get them wrong. But it's also easy to get them right with very little explanation. And Nabiki, one of the tropes she has on TV Tropes is femme fatale. Which is not quite right.
No.
But she'll do that sometimes. And if I said to you, teenage ADHD wants to go out on Friday night femme fatale, you could probably write out a fairly decent Nabiki scene.
Yeah, probably.
You know, you get a couple things wrong. All of the things that I've read about Nabiki that are wrong, like, and I've called them out as wrong, the seductress, you know, they're wrong, mostly because they portray her as a character in an adult world, acting like an adult.
Yes.
You know, if she were in a spy movie, maybe she would be the seductress or the femme fatale, but she's not. She's a teenager who wants to eat ice cream and hang out with her friends. She does have two classmates, I just found out, that are her friends, two girls.
Are they her classmates or Akane's classmates? Because they're very, Rumiko Takahashi was very inconsistent with the classmates. I don't recall seeing Nabiki talk to anyone, but
here's what
probably.
I got. There's a pair that helps her hustle during the first fight between Ranma and Ryoga, taking bets. And in the anime, they actually are given appearances. They have strawberry blonde and short hair. One is strawberry blonde with long hair. One is short haired brunette. They have no names. And then later they go to an event, like going to a bathhouse together. They're just kind of people she hangs out with. These are not major characters.
I think that, yeah, that makes sense. In the sense that, like,
so she's kind of,
whenever there's group shots, we do see she isn't literally alone at school. There are other students with her. It's just they don't get scenes of her interacting with them.
Yeah. And it's the thing is that I think that what you end up with is, yeah, maybe in a different genre show. In a show that's, you know, intrigue and spies, maybe she would be a femme fatale character. Maybe she grows up to be a femme fatale character. But right now, she's a kid who wants some money and wants to hang out with her friends and wants ice cream and probably wants Genma to move out and probably has mixed feelings about Ranma. Like, she doesn't hate him. She doesn't like him. You know, it's complicated. Sometimes she helps him out. Sometimes she treats him well. Sometimes she uses him to make money. But it's just like she's just a kid who's like, I figured out some ways that I can rip off the people I don't like to, you know, get things for the people I do. They're not like particularly genius ways, except, you know, later in the manga when it gets silly. But a lot of times it's like, yeah, get me a picture of the red-haired girl. And she's like, okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Because she doesn't, she's got a teenage conscience and she doesn't really think about the consequences. She gets demonized for this. And I think Kasumi's sort of the same way. Like, I've talked about her depth of psychology, and maybe there's a pain in losing her mom, and the way that she's 19 and she's already like a married woman functionally.
Yes.
And that's probably really hard for her. But she's also just like, you know, she's the cute, smart, homemaker, oblivious one who says the funny comment. She says the punchline, the final line of the scene. Something weird happens. Her reaction is the punchline.
Yes.
And these things are very, very, very simple and can be transposed into other forms very easily. And I think that's true. Like, you can take Nabiki, who previously hadn't had a fight scene, and say, well, what if we gave her a fight scene? We'll use the same character traits and we'll just play it up and kick it up and kick it up and kick it up. And what would be funny, and then we end up with her diving out of a plane saying, I'll save you for $50.
Yeah.
Or like in movie 2, where she ends up with taking one of the bad guys and turning him into her servant. Why? I don't know. That was off screen. You know, it's just she hit him with the pillow and she treats him like a dog. And there's some issues that with that depiction of that character, because he's also kind of drawn in ways that are problematic.
Yeah, yeah. The animal people in movie 2 are they feel like characters are designed from a different show.
Yeah, and there's some like, you know, people with disabilities issues that you could look at there, but also the core part there is just like, haha, she defeated her captor and now she's in charge. How? I don't know, it's funny. She's a teenage girl. How did she do it? Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, the guy's literally a dog, so it probably wasn't that hard.
And so there's just like I think that's one of the keys to these two characters, and by extension, the larger Ranma characterization is the way they are easily transportable, and they've got this like very simple summary of what do they do.
Yeah.
In each moment.
It definitely feels like a lot of stories were written by just, well, what if you put this character in this scenario and it practically writes itself?
And then you add in what would be funniest and go for that.
Yeah.
And if what would be funniest is Kasumi kills a man, yeah, that would probably happen. But generally it would be funnier. No, she's going to knock them out and then do absolutely nothing.
Yes.
And then admit to being the demon. Because that's funnier.
Yes.
And it's, she, you know, the actress does a great line delivery. The art is perfect.
We don't see
the
it.
The character design suits it.
Like, you said she probably sat and drank tea. I could just imagine her just sipping while just staring at what she has done, just feeling proud of herself.
Yeah. And that's entirely based on our characterization of her. It actually doesn't matter what she did. It's just what would be funniest for her to have done.
Yeah.
Would it be funnier if she had messed up people in the house? I don't know. I think the fact that it's small makes it funnier. The fact that she didn't even need to use poison makes it funnier. Like, she didn't have a goal. She's just there.
Yeah. And like at the end of the day, like, it's always rule of funny. Whatever's funniest is the case. We don't need to read into it. Mm-hmm. But if we do, I like this arc because I feel it does give us the best insight into her character. Because as established, like in the scene, Genma didn't even realize he was no longer possessed. Like, that's how the Oni works. It draws out the part of you. So when she's, as we've established, she's being very passive aggressive. We could infer that there's definitely something in her that this behavior is being born from, but the fact that it's so mild, and at least compared to everyone else, and that she is still being the homemaker, shows that is also genuinely core to her character. It's not just an act, it is an actual part of her that is still being brought out by the Oni.
And the only way that could be changed is if something even funnier occurred to Rumiko Takahashi.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, if she were to fall into, like, the Jusenkyo pool of berserker rage, and Takahashi found that funny, that would happen.
I mean, that character basically exists. You're describing Rouge, basically.
I know. But yeah, so that's, I think that's why they're interesting also, because they don't fight. They don't do stuff. Half the time they're not even there. They often exist to get mad at Ranma and kick him out of the house, not as individual characters, but as part of the chorus.
Yeah.
You know, like whenever he's kicked out and has to go sleep under the bridge, you know, Nabiki is mad at him or annoyed by him. And Kasumi is like, well, I think there's various things. She'll either make him a package or be like, please apologize to Akane when you get back or something like that. I don't remember the specifics, but it's always very gentle, but also asking him to do something.
Yeah. She doesn't baby the family.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that was the Oni storyline, which, as I said, it's just nonsense. The Oni possesses people. It's clearly harmless, relatively speaking. They eventually put a seal on it, and it's defeated. It's not a major storyline. It's not important. You could have easily skipped it, and you wouldn't be missing out on anything. But, like, it's stories like that that make it maybe not important, but like it makes it the most fun to analyze the characters through.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I believe that's a good core, like that's a good example to really understand Kasumi. We've probably broken her down as best as we can using only the clear text of the story, and anything beyond that would be speculation on our part, really. But what about Nabiki? What is her equivalent of the evil Oni storyline?
Is it the Konosuke one?
No, because the Konosuke one is mostly just jokes. It's literally, well, again, the joke is, well, what if Nabiki had to fight someone? How would she fight? Money battle. That's it. Konosuke is just a villain of the week. He is just here to be a opponent for Nabiki, and it's funny because of the wacky shenanigans. But to get that essence that we get in the evil Oni storyline, that gives us insight to the character we almost never get. Like, you cannot challenge that. The Oni canonically brings out something from deep within you. There is something about Kasumi that we maybe potentially learned. And I think there is a storyline that is the equivalent for Nabiki. I am going to send you a GIF. I would like you to describe to me what you are looking at, if you don't mind.
All right. She's running forward. Oh, hold on. And being very sweet. And she hugs Ranma and she's like kissing at him. And Akane's fuming, and Kasumi looks... Let me go rewind a little bit. How did Kasumi look? Kasumi looks a little confused. And let's see what is on the... She calls him husband, using the word anata, which means you, but is a sweet and nice husband thing, I'm guessing, in the audio. I'm not hearing the audio, but I can tell from the panda sign.
Yeah.
And then Akane walks in, and she starts fuming, and Nabiki gives an evil glance at Akane. And Akane then runs off, and then Nabiki stamps her fingers in disappointment, and is like, aw, man.
Yep, that's the clip.
Also, I should mention that Ranma grows the standard Takahashi duck mouth of whenever someone is surprised and they almost grow a beak.
Yes. Ranma is very much flustered by this level of affection he's receiving from Nabiki.
Or from anyone, probably.
Yeah, true. He's like this with anyone, really.
But his face, there's a still in the GIF where he's like, he's gone flat.
Yes.
He's not a three-dimensional character. And his face is open, and it's pointed like a beak, and he's got a tongue sticking out like it's a piece of hair or a snake tongue. And he's just like, ah!
Ah!
It's very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
But
is this from the new show or the old show?
The old show. This is a... I'm not really sure what to call this arc. Some of them have very obvious names. But this is my actual favorite arc in the series.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not sure if you, like, I feel like if you've seen it, you probably would recognize it from what's happening in the scene.
There's a lot of I've forgotten story arcs.
Yeah. But yeah, this is one of the ones I am so upset that when this got adapted into the anime, it was a single episode, despite the fact that it very clearly has a midway point. There is an act one and an act two, and they very clearly couldn't fit it all into one episode, so they cut stuff out to fit it into one. And I'm just like, but you could have just had two episodes instead of cutting stuff out. Like, you gave two episodes to the weird, like, steam bun bald men that wanted to steal Ranma's hairpin or whatever, but not this? That's lame. But anyways, I suppose I will start with the setup before I give away what this arc is about. Because this arc begins with something I've said before I want to see more of. I want to see the characters interacting with each other beyond just Ranma. The Ranma does not pass the Bechdel test, I would say, probably. You very rarely see any characters talking to each other unless it involves Ranma or he is present. This arc starts with an exception, because we get to see Kasumi, I got the names messed up. Nabiki and Akane being sisters. Because at the start, basically, Nabiki comes home and her shirt gets ruined. And it's like, oh no! And she's like, it's fine, it's not mine anyways. And Akane's like, hey, wait, that's mine! And Nabiki's like, don't worry, you can borrow one of my shirts to make up for it. And then Akane looks in her closet, he's like, wait, this one's mine too! And that! All of this is mine! I told you to stop stealing my clothes! And they just get an argument. And this is just so innocuous. This is such a non-issue, but like just seeing them have this very sibling dynamic of, yeah, you're stealing my clothes. Stop that. It's annoying.
Now, just so I'm clear, who's stealing whose clothes in this bit? Is it Akane stealing the clothes or is it Nabiki?
Just Nabiki is stealing Akane's clothes. The realization that all of Nabiki's clothes are actually Akane's clothes that she's just been stealing over the years. Like, they look in the closet and Akane's like, all of this is mine. And we even get like a joke where she's like, what else have you been stealing from me? And then Ranma comes in with a t-shirt. He's like, hey, thanks for lending me this rag, Nabiki. I cleaned the dojo with it. And Akane's, of course, like, that's also mine. And I just like this. Just this dumb little sibling dynamic. But this results in, as always, Ranma puts his foot in his mouth. He's very insensitive. But for once, he's not alone. There's this, just the whole scene of Ranma and Nabiki both being very insensitive towards Akane at the family dinner table, and Akane gets upset. So we get the moment, the typical moment, Kasumi's like, hey, I think you really hurt her feelings, you should apologize to her. So both Ranma and Nabiki together go to her to apologize, and they of course do a terrible job. They just basically continue to be insensitive and rude to her. And then eventually they're at the balcony, which the series is very inconsistent as to whether or not there is a balcony outside of Akane's room or if it just leads to the rooftop. But in this scene, they're on a balcony and it breaks. So Ranma makes the correct decision. A lot of people would probably get very unhappy with the fact that Akane gets mad at this, but Ranma concludes that Akane is a martial artist. She knows how to break a fall. Nabiki does not. So he rescues Nabiki. And Akane lands fine. It's a rough landing, but she's okay. And she's unhappy with this. And is it reasonable for her to be upset that Ranma rescued Nabiki over her? Yeah, it's a little unreasonable, but also, again, she is a teenager, and the two of them were literally being super rude to her like 5 minutes ago. I continue to be insensitive afterwards. So Akane gets so upset that we get the line where she's basically like, well, since you two get along so well, why don't you two get engaged? To which Nabiki says, okay.
Oh boy.
and Ranma and Akane are both shocked, as Nabiki then grabs Ranma and is like, no take backs, right? He's mine now. And that ends that scene of just, oh. And that's what the arc is about. This is the storyline where Ranma becomes Nabiki's fiance. And it is my favorite.
That sounds nightmarish, but good. Like, nightmarish in a good way. Nightmarish yes. in a fun way.
It is such a fun premise. And, like, I'm going to tell what happens in the rest of the arc, but it ultimately does not matter. It doesn't matter because the concept alone is what sells it. And this is Ranma, so of course, by the end of the story, everything's going to reset back to square one. This isn't going to result in a long-term change. Otherwise, you probably would have known that if Nabiki became a permanent love interest, this is obviously not going to stick.
No, she's teenage Symbolic's love interest. She can't be Ranma.
Yeah, he's not going to steal her from you. You'll beat him up.
No, not me. Teenage me.
Yes,
we're different people.
Teenage you will try to beat him up. But yeah.
And fail.
It is a fun concept. And even if the end result is just another reset to the status quo, I still love the gimmick because, in my opinion, true character development is when your perception of a character is challenged. It doesn't have to change. It just has to be challenged. The question, yeah. You have maybe, well, I don't know about you, but like, it's possible that the audience has never even considered the possibility of Ranma and Nabiki as a ship. They've likely never questioned how Nabiki feels towards Ranma, and are probably just as confused of why is she so eager to become his fiance all of a sudden? Why is she agreeing to this? Why does she want this? And regardless, that question is now in your head. It has been inception there. You are now questioning her character. Even if the end result, even if the answer to the question of where is this going is nowhere, the question is what matters. You were forced to temporarily look at her in a new light and challenge what you thought of her. Even if the end result is that she's exactly who you initially thought of her, you had to go on this journey to come to that conclusion.
Now, how is the relationship between Ranma and Nabiki in this story arc? Like, is she, I mean, we get a very specific, kind of scheming, kind of mean Nabiki in that GIF you showed me. GIF? Both. It's a Jeff.
Yeah.
Jorf. And, so she's being very affectionate, but also clearly checking off Akane for a reaction. Does she keep that mask up? Is there genuineness in that performance?
As I said,
does she get tired of the performance?
This arc has a very clear first and second act. There is a clear midway point where we suddenly shift gears, which is why I feel it should have been a two-parter, because there's a very clear cliffhanger, and now the second episode's about this. But the first half is basically just, what does this mean now? What is this going to lead to? And we start by just seeing the family's reactions. Like, Son is just like, well, as long as he marries one of the daughters, it doesn't matter. But this is still kind of weird. Are you sure this is what you kids want? And even Kasumi is like talking to Akane, like, are you sure you don't want to speak up? Like, they're actually going to get engaged. And Akane's just upset because they were both rude to her and now they're engaged. Who cares? And we even get the moment where Ranma gets up to follow Akane to school. And they're like, no, you're Nabiki's fiance now. You walk her to school. It's like, oh, this is weird. And they go to school and the whole school is talking about it. They're spreading rumors about how Ranma cheated on Akane with her sister. I can't believe that scumbag, all this funny stuff. And this arc does something we almost never see. I can't think of any other example. This is maybe the only time where we see Nabiki get caught off guard, out of her element. Because one of the first major... Because, of course, she inevitably starts using Ranma. She starts renting him out to various clubs, like sports club or anyone who needs some extra muscle.
Of course.
She's using him to make money. But then comes the main problem. Ranma has other love interests. And those love interests could have potentially tried to take him by force up until now, but doing so means they probably would have had to fight Akane. And maybe that's why they didn't do that. But now he's engaged to Nabiki. And every single one of these characters simultaneously went, I could take her.
It's not even a question.
Yeah. So we now get Nabiki getting attacked by Hodachi and Shampoo and Ukyo. And she's literally, again, pretty much the only time we see her out of her element. We see that moment of regret where she's like, okay, maybe this was a bad idea. And she's just running for her life. And then Ranma, of course, rescues her because he's got to protect her. Shout out, Ranma's at least, like, committing to this. He does walk her to school. He is protecting her. And Nabiki is being very playful, like, oh, thank you, darling. Thank you, my lovely fiancé, for protecting me. And all the while, Akane, who insists that she's absolutely not jealous, she's not mad, just because she has these two shrubs on a stick and is hiding in the bushes to spy on them, it does not mean she's mad. Mm-hmm. She's not upset. As she sees, like, Nabiki cuddling up to Ranma because he rescued her from Shampoo or whatever.
Akane is very normal about it.
Yeah. And then eventually Nabiki figures out, oh, wait, I can just rent Ranma to the other love interest as well. So by the end of it, we just get, like, Ukyo grabbing Ranma, like, hey, I paid, like, $15 to, like, we're going on a date now, and like, Shampoo's like, I get him tomorrow, and just waves goodbye. And again, this is after he gets this busy schedule having to help every other club. So, after a bunch of wacky shenanigans, Ranma comes home completely exhausted. He has had the worst day of his life, and he has finally had enough, and actually just calls out Nabiki of, like, this sucks, I hate this, screw you. And then we get the big, the changer, the thing that shifts gears into this arc. Because Ranma say, screw this, I don't care what happens, I'm not going to be engaged to you. To which Nabiki says, Ranma, you don't understand. I wanted this. Like, I never said anything before because of Akane, but you realize I actually do like you. And he's like, what? And of course, Akane just happened to be overhearing. And she's also like, what? And then it's another just freeze frame, and that's the end of the scene. And we then shift into the second half of the arc, where now Nabiki is openly showing her affection, calling Ranma her darling, just making it very clear she is in love with him, and she's not letting him leave. And this is immediately drowned out by a scene where she's talking to Kasumi, and Kasumi's like, do you actually mean that? And Nabiki's like, nah. So all of this, and of course she's saying, nah, she was lying. Doesn't matter. But this is where I think it's very interesting, because again, even if we end up back at square one, our perception is still being challenged. Nabiki has now presented us with two different truths that are contradictory. Either she is messing with Ranma just for fun, because, I mean, to be honest, what does she have to gain from this by tricking him into thinking that she actually loves him? How does this benefit her other than, I guess, technically she gets to continue using him, and eventually, because Akane also overheard, he concludes that, oh, if Nabiki actually loves Ranma, I'm going to back off. So eventually, Nabiki's like, oh, I may have actually caused some damage here. I need to get these two back together. But again, she doesn't need to lie to Ranma for that. In fact, she could just break up with him and everything will be fine. She could just say, okay, fine, I had my fun. You two get back together. But she lied to him. And according to her, it's because she actually wants to be with him. And the only reason she never said anything previously is because she knows that Akane likes him and she doesn't want to get in between them. And throughout this second half, we see that she legitimately cares about Akane. She wants these two back together once she sees that there's actual harm to their relationship being done by this. And she is trying to egg Akane on and get Akane to make a move by making her jealous. This is why she plays up her act, and why in that gif I showed you, she does a little rat's motion of, aw, dang, she just left.
Oh, so she's trying to get Akane to speak up and fight for her beloved.
Yes, but instead Akane is just accepting, like, nope, those two belong together. This is real. Nobiki deserves Ranma. And so we get this possibility, this statement that all of that was a lie. That is what she claimed. But also, if it was true, we have seen that she does care about Akane. It is absolutely a thing that she would not admit to being true.
Yeah.
Either of these could be potentially the truth. Like, and as I said, she doesn't need to lie to Ranma. It is not necessary for her goals at any point. And eventually she does just give up and straight up tell Akane that it was a lie. Sorry. Anyways, you can have Ranma again. To which Akane's like, I don't care. You can have him, whatever. Back to being a tsundere. But again, why even play up this act? Why have this scene I showed you where she's literally jumping on Ranma and showering him with hugs and kisses, only to then just be like, ah, screw it. Just, you could have him, Akane. We're done. Like, why even put up this act in the first place if her ultimate goal is to get them back together?
I don't know. And I think that's interesting. There's a lot. Even the answer to that question is fruitful for fan fiction.
Yes. I have no clue. I feel like if you look up any Ranma Nobiki fan fiction, chances are whoever wrote that probably saw this episode or read this storyline in the manga. Because again, the concept is so strong. It doesn't even matter where we end up or the journey we take there. It is inception, the idea into your head. You are now thinking, well, what if she actually likes Ranma?
Yeah.
Even if the answer is no, she was just lying because it's funny, the fact that we're asking the question and we have to actually look at this and examine it and try and figure out what is most likely and come to the conclusion that, like, well, if it is true, she wouldn't admit it, so it ultimately doesn't matter, but it could be true. Like, that to me is what gives her character development in the same way that the Eva Oni story that did for Kasumi. Because it's making us question the characters in ways we wouldn't have before.
Okay, that makes sense. I don't really have anything to add to that. I think that's just a very good take on what the stories do and what they often mean.
Yeah. And if you're curious, the end of the storyline is Ranma overhears Kasumi say that it was a lie. So he's like, oh, just you wait. I'm going to get you for this. And his plan is to ask Nobiki out on a date and basically freak her out. I don't really know what his plan was. Like, Ranma is scared of affection, and I guess he assumed that Nobiki is also, because his plan is basically to take her out on a nice date and profess his love to her, as if he assumed that will make her uncomfortable and get back at her for lying to him.
The way it would, because he sees everyone else is Ranma to him. Everyone else is him to him.
Yes, if someone did that to him, he would freak out.
That explains all of his treatment of Akane, because he thinks, oh, Akane is me. I will treat her like me.
Yeah, genuinely, a lot of the insensitive things he says is because he would not have been offended if someone said that to him. Yeah. So why should Akane be offended?
Now, I have
But anyways, to admit, the joke...
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, the joke at the end is that Ranma rushes towards Nobiki and grabs her from behind and shouts, I love you. But then it turns out he accidentally grabbed Akane. And it's like, uh-oh, no, I didn't mean that. No. And they have their little dumb argument. And both of them are now aware that Nobiki was lying. So back to the status quo. Nobiki just walks away, her dusts her hands. Job well done. And that's the end of the storyline.
That's funny. Now,
I was just saying, ultimately, we're back to the status quo. Nothing changed. You could have skipped this storyline like you could have skipped any other storyline, but the questions remain in our heads, and we now have to think about them.
Ranma never changes,
But the questions remain in our head, and now we have to think about them. Fallout 1/2.
All right. Well, I think we've done a really good job deep diving into these two characters. And so the only thing really left to say about them is I want to read you this excerpt from a fan fiction in which Nobiki and Kasumi get to know each other.
Sure.
Ah, that can't be me, Kasumi pointed at the pictures. I don't know how to explain it, sis, but it has to be. I can tell these photos were taken with my camera. I want to reenact some of these pictures.